Hi, my name is Ophélie, and you're listening to the Mama Activist Podcast, a podcast where we explore topics ranging from social justice, culture, politics, and news through deep conversation with myself, activists, humanitarians, and everyday people trying to make a difference. It's a space where we are willing to learn, grow, and be challenged collectively while highlighting activists doing amazing things in the world. From hearing new perspectives to learning new things, we are pushing for a better world, fighting for our liberation and reclaiming our power. So tune in and be a part of the movement.
Hey guys, it's Ophélie, your favorite mama activist, back with a new episode of the Mama Activist podcast. How are we doing today? I hope you're doing fine. Thank you for tuning in and for listening to today's episode. If you've been following my journey in Africa, Sierra Leone, thank you. I'm going back to France very soon, but only because my sister, Cassandra, who has been on the podcast a lot, is giving birth, and I think it's personally important for me to be there for her while she starts her journey as a new mom. But we'll be back in Africa very soon. We actually will be back in, whether in June or in July, but before autumn, I think. I think summer time is the best time to spend in Europe, but I definitely want to be back before autumn. Anyway, my last episode was about education. I talked about education with one of the kids of the community who is not going to school, and we talked about how a lot of children here are not going to school because of their parents not being able to afford the school fee, and you know, just being in very poor situation. It was a very, very good talk. This episode is going to be about colorism, and I have talked about colorism a lot. I made an episode about, I wrote an article about how colorism was creating division within the Black community. I also talked with one of my good friends who is the creator of a beautiful page to do with like embracing your hair. It's called the name I can't quite remember right now. Shame on me. What's the name? Sorry for swearing. It will come back to me. When it comes back to me, I will share with you guys. So I talked already about how colorism was creating division within the Black community. Just to give an understanding of what colorism is. In simple words, colorism is a discriminative practice of showing preferences to those with lighter skin and being discriminative to those with darker skin. It takes root in racism and goes way back. During slavery, Black people with lighter skin tones will receive better treatment. Those with lighter skin were perceived to be better, more beautiful, more intelligent. Lighter skin slaves were often the product of slave owners raping their slaves. They would receive preferential treatment because they were deemed closer to whiteness than their peer. So, colorism through history. During slavery, Black people, during slavery, Black people with lighter skin would receive better treatment, but there were also things to kind of like determine whether or not you could pass, whether or not that will determine your status in society, whether or not you were too dark or light enough to have like a good status in society, such as the brown paper bag test. The test was there to really determine your status in society. Those with lighter skin than the paper bag were more likely to be accepted into the upper classes than a person with darker skin. And it will determine your privilege based on your skin tone and whether you were worthy of an education. People with darker skin will then be marginalized. And colorism within the Black community is really creating a separation in the West based on hierarchy of skin tone, which is rooted in anti-Blackness. The lighter your skin, the greater your privilege. The darker your skin, the greater your handicap. And communities of color in the West, unfortunately, are sometimes and deliberately furthering white supremacy through colorism. There is a common assumption that aligning with whiteness might and will provide benefits, access, opportunities, and privileges, that it will open doors. And it's not just a thing of the past, it's still very present nowadays. And it's really assimilating into a society, thinking that it will grant you some sort of protection against institutional racism, when in reality, it really sustains and upheld white supremacy. But yes, so once again, I have talked a lot about it. I already made an episode about this. I wrote an article about this. Also, I talked a lot about white adjacency, which is aligning with whiteness and distancing yourself from your ethnic and racial identity for better opportunity. And it's really white supremacy manifesting as colorism. But one thing that I never experienced before was how colorism expresses itself in African countries. By the way, I just remember the group that my friend started is called the Organic Afro Community. So going back to colorism in Africa and how it expresses itself here and the things that I have been able to witness here, it has a lot to do with people bleaching their skin. The first time that I saw a person that were obviously bleaching their skin, I was in town and there was this woman, very beautiful woman, whose skin was terrible. Like, her skin was just, yeah, it was just very damaged. It just didn't look healthy. She was very like light skin, but her skin was terrible. And I remember, like, actually, like, I don't like staring at people in the street. I find it very rude because I don't like people doing this to me neither, but I actually couldn't stop looking at her skin because of how terrible it was. And, you know, I actually wanted to give her some health advice, like, you know, like, girl, you should eat more fruits, more, like, you know. And I remember turning to my friends who were with me and being like, why is her skin so bad, you know? And I was early, like, when we came in Sierra Leone. And they just told me, oh, yeah, she's bleaching her skin. Like, it was normal, you know. They weren't really shocked. You know, they had seen it before, so for them it wasn't anything new. But for me, it was kind of shocking. And it was very, very shocking. And I have seen people whose skin, were bleaching their skin. You know, being in Paris, when you walk around, you also see a lot of women who are trying to bleach their skin. And again, you know, white supremacy. But I had never seen before someone whose skin had been so damaged by bleaching their skin. A lot of the products that you find here in town are like, you know, like, they're here to like lighten your skin, to make your skin more more light. There is also a lot of like French products. The word that they use is like éclaircissant, which is a word that has a lot of meaning. It can either mean to just make your skin better or to make your skin lighter, which in this case is to make your skin lighter. At the beginning of our journey here in Sierra Leone, I also had a nanny who was coming from a very poor family and who would kind of take like any product that people will give her. And unfortunately, our sister kept on having those like skin products from this person, but all of those products had some some kind of like chemical in it that were meant to make your skin lighter as well. But she wasn't really aware of it. So my nanny kept on like using those products because she didn't have any other choices, and she just started seeing that her skin was getting like was getting bad every day. And then one day she came to me and she was like, Auntie Ophelie, like my skin is so bad. She kept on scratching. She was very uncomfortable with her skin. And so I took her product and I realized that those were bleaching products. And so I had a discussion with her, and obviously she stopped using them, but the damage had been done already. So she went to speak to some of her friends who told her that she had to use more products. And it was like they wanted her to get into like this cycle of like just using more product to kind of like stop the chemicals that had been through her skin in an attempt to bleach her skin. But since that day, since I saw that woman in the street and I realized that my nanny was using bleaching products without being aware of it, I just became super aware of like how many people are using bleach product here. And it's not just the woman, it's also the man. You see them in town, you see how light they are, and you see how bad their skin are, and you realize, it's just very obvious, you know, that they are trying to bleach their skin. And if one thing I find it very sad, for me it's very sad that, you know, people are in, and it's not even their fault, like I cannot blame them, but it's heartbreaking that a lot of people, even here in Africa, when, you know, they are surrounded by black people with whom they can identify with. But there is that, like, denial, that non-acceptance. And I wanted to look like someone that you are not in order to be seen as better, or to, like, have more opportunities, to have more respect, or... To have more, you know, is like, is a denial of it, of like themselves, that comes with a lot of consequences, because it's not only saying that they are not good enough, that something is like not accepting something about themselves, but it's really supporting the belief that white people are better and that we should look like them in order to be accepted. And again, it's upholding white supremacy is one of the ways that the black community is upholding white supremacy. And here in Africa, you know, there is, I haven't been to all the African countries, but here in Sierra Leone, there is a lot of suffering. A lot of people are living in situations where they have no hope, you know, they are really struggling, they don't necessarily have people or family that can support them, they struggle to make ends meet, they don't have enough money to send their children to school, to buy food some days, you know, they go many days without eating, and for a lot of those people, you know, they have internalized the belief that whiteness is better, that, you know, white people's world is a better world than their own, and the white man's land is better than their own, and that the white man is better in, like, just the white man is better. And, you know, when they meet white people is... You can see that, like, I had two friends who came two friends with whom I went to school. I've known them for, like, years. And them being here with me, it was very uncomfortable. Like, I had a nice time with them, but, like, the nicest time that we had together when they were here were actually when we left my village. To go on like eco lodge, But yes, them being here in Mambo with me was very uncomfortable, because a lot of people just came to us, you know. A lot of people came to us, they kept on talking to us, they kept on wanting to offering stuff to them. They treated them like they were gods. They treated them like they were better than them. A lot of people kept on telling them about how they wanted to go to Europe, how, you know, their countries is bad, how their hair were beautiful, how their skin was beautiful. And again, there was like, you know, them saying those things is kind of them saying that that they are better. They are better because they are white, you know, like all those children who came and who touched my friend's hair saying, oh, your hairs are so beautiful. It was like they were also saying that their hair were wrong and that they wish they had hair like white people. And unfortunately here, a lot of people are trying to have like soft, straight hair, and actually don't really like having afro, even though there is an acceptance and more of an embrace of afro hair than there is in Europe. There is a lot of like rejection, like denial, a lot of like trying, a lot of people, a lot of women who relaxes their hair, which is very, very sad. But yes, it was uncomfortable for this. It was also uncomfortable because, yeah, literally everybody will look at them, everybody will try to take advantage of them, but mostly everybody will see them as like gods, you know, as like people who had more, people who were better, people who came from a better world. So a lot of people wanted to be their friend. A lot of people, yeah, just gave them a lot of things, did their hair for free. And yeah, just kept on like stopping in the house to talk to them like they were better. And like there was a day where we cooked in the house and I was sick, so I was in bed and I wasn't able to like help with the cooking. And there wasn't enough food for everyone, and there was a lot of children in the house who needed to eat. And the children, when the food was cooked, they just gave all the food to my friend. They didn't keep anything for themselves. They just gave all the food to them, to my friends. And my friends actually came to my room to tell me about it because they felt very uncomfortable. And the children just were like, but do you know your friends had to eat? Like, it was like, you could see that belief was so internalized that they were willing to like not eat, deprive themselves of food to make sure that my friends, white people, were eating, you know. So I had to have like a lot of conversation with the kids to make them understand that, you know, the white person, a white man, the white like human is not what they think, and that they didn't have to treat white people better than they treated themselves or people from their community. And it was not easy to have this conversation. I haven't had this conversation with any adult, but yeah, people just kept on coming, cooking for them. Even my friend felt uncomfortable, you know, especially one of my friend who is on that journey of like understanding her privilege and becoming as anti-racist as she can. She kept on telling them about how like Europe is not what they think, about how Europe is very cruel with black people, and how, you know, they shouldn't dream of going there. And like, this is it, people here dream of going to Europe because they think that this is where the opportunities are. They don't necessarily understand that if the white man is so comfortable, it's because the black man is suffering. And for the white man to be so comfortable, the black man has to suffer, because this is how the system is, and how, you know, institutions in Europe are very racist. And when my white friend had those talk with them, it was actually like they actually listened, you know. But when I'm trying to say this to people here, they are like, you know, like, what is she saying? Like, you know, she has a chance to live there. Like, why does she want, like, doesn't she want us to have the same opportunities? That was another interesting thing to see. But yeah, it's very sad, you know, because you really see how bad internalized racism is and how it has even ravaged the heart of Black people in Africa, and how there is this internalized belief that, yeah, that anything to do with whiteness is better. So you really see how white supremacy has kind of like, it's like a parasite, you know, it truly is like a parasite. And I wish that people will wake up more and liberate themselves from that oppression, because it is oppression. Like, how oppressive to like live in a way where you don't like your skin. You don't like your skin so much that you would like use chemical, you will damage your skin to try to look like them because you think that they are better. How sad. You know, and through colonization, like African institutions were all colonized. A lot of people here are Christian and they're obviously praying a white Jesus. So still there is that belief that, you know, even Jesus is white. Even Jesus who came to save people, to save human, who was sent by God, you know, who is divine, who is holy, even he is white. You know, people here praise white pastors. They praise white people, even if they do nothing, even if most of the white people who are here are not like actively trying to disrupt the system, even if like a lot of like companies coming from Europe are still like exploiting and oppressing the people here, taking advantage. Still, they are praised in a way because of what they represent. They represent better opportunities. And when you come from a poor background where, you know, you are struggling, struggling to find food, to put food on your children's plates, to send your children to school. Obviously, you know, you are going to put on a pedestal things that you think would give you more. And in this instance is the white man's world. But the reality is that the white man's world for a Black person is not this. And I think a lot of Black people here don't realize the violence, the oppression that Black people in Europe are going through. Is like they are almost not aware of it. Like me, I'm having this conversation a lot of time with people here, trying to make them understand the violence, you know, especially because of the work that I do, working with like Black asylum seekers and refugees and seeing the condition in which these communities are forced to live just because they came to Europe without paper seeking asylum. And, you know, telling this to the people here, a lot of people almost don't believe me or don't want to believe me or just don't think that is possible because they see Europe as being this like land of opportunities. A lot of them want to go to Europe. A lot of people have asked me plenty time if I could help them get there, you know. A lot of men are like wanted to date me because they think that by dating me I will open doors for them to go to Europe. But yeah, and like all the times that I have shared my work with Black asylum seekers and Black refugees, for the people who did believe me, they just couldn't believe it at first, you know, because of how horrible and how violent those experiences are. And yet it is the truth, you know. Europe, the West, does not like Black people. Like, the West is systemic racism is a real thing. All those institutions were not made to allow black people to thrive. And for a black person to thrive, you will have to work more. You will have to like assimilate with their culture, you know. You will have to like put up way much more work than a white person. Like racism is also present here, but racism in Europe is a different experience that a lot of black people here just don't understand because they have not experienced it. And for the people who have made it to Europe, a lot of them, like, and I'm saying this because I worked with a lot of like black asylum seekers and black refugees, and I remember how none of them wanted to tell their families or friends back home what was happening to them. A lot of them were pretending that everything was okay. And a lot of their family thought that because they were in Europe, you know, their life was good. So even for those who wanted to tell their families the truth, a lot of them did not believe them because in their mind, Europe is better. But it was only until some of them made it to Europe that they realized that Europe is not what they thought. But anyway, going back to colorism, how sad, you know, how sad that these women are trying to be white, in denial of themselves, are trying to align with whiteness and distance themselves from their ethnic and racial identity for better opportunities. You know, this is like internalized anti-black perception. It's like demonizing black skin, and it justifies and encourages practices such as skin bleaching, which is widely happening here. And that active culture of demonizing black skin results in things like black people being scared of tanning, risking tanning and getting darker, reinforcing the idea that lighter skin makes you more beautiful. And it puts darker skinned people at a greater risk of discrimination. So, we need to do better. We need to liberate ourselves from those system of oppression because it is oppression. And it's sad to see that even in African countries, people are still victims of that oppression. Anyway, that's it for today, guys. I will see you in the next episode.